Radio Prague News.
Visegrad Group leaders have called for a European Commission president who will understand their region. Talks between political leaders are expected to decide the Czech government's fate on Tuesday night. And Czech and Russian aviation authorities are working to resolve an air dispute that has cancelled several flights between Prague and Moscow. The Visegrad four states, comprising the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Poland and Hungary, still oppose Franz Timmermans as the next European Commission president, Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš told reporters ahead of a third day of EU talks in Brussels on Tuesday. Babiš repeated the reservations of the V4 states with regard to Timmermans, citing his stand on migration and saying that his election would only result in deepening divisions in the European Union. The Visegrad states did not propose their own candidate, but said they would favour someone who understands the specifics of the Visegrad region. EU leaders went back to the negotiating table close to midday on Tuesday after an 18-hour marathon the previous day failed to break the deadlock in talks. The leaders of the Czech ruling coalition, Prime Minister Andrej Babiš and Deputy Prime Minister Jan Hamáček, will hold talks with President Miloš Zeman on Tuesday evening to try to resolve a dispute that could bring down the government. Jan Hamáček, leader of the Social Democrats, has threatened to walk out of the ruling coalition unless the president complies with his party's request to remove Antonín Staněk from the post of culture minister and replace him with the party's nominee Michal Šmarda. The president has so far refused to do so, despite the fact that the prime minister officially requested the culture minister's dismissal a month ago. According to the Czech constitution, the president is bound to comply with the prime minister's request. Prime Minister Babiš said on Tuesday he would seek to reach a compromise in the dispute in order to preserve the ruling coalition. Unlike the Social Democrats, he is against taking legal action against the president. The Czech aviation authorities have revoked an earlier decision to withdraw flight permits to Prague for at least three Russian airline companies, including the flagship carrier Aeroflot. The decision, which resulted in the cancellation of several flights from Moscow and Yekaterinburg to Prague and Karlovy Vary, was reportedly made in retaliation for Russia's decision to severely limit the number of Czech flights over Siberia, affecting regular flights between Prague and Seoul. The Czech Transport Ministry said on Tuesday that all flight permits would remain valid until the end of this week, by when the two sides hope to resolve the route dispute. A scientific satellite developed by researchers from the Czech Technical University in Prague will be launched into space on Friday. The satellite, named Lucky 7, will be on board a Russian Soyuz rocket launched from the Vostochny Cosmodrome. The satellite should enable verification of the latest scientific knowledge on the construction of electronic systems and the radio communication of space probes for space exploration. It was developed as a private project without state support. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Wednesday should bring clear skies around most of the country and day temperatures between 21 and 25 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Coming up in today's programme, who will fill the European Union's key posts? We'll bring you the Czech take on the drawn-out dispute. Then we'll have another report from the Karlovy Vary International Film Festival, this one highlighting a much-discussed Czech film. And later on, we'll take you to the city of Olomouc in the eastern part of the country that has been drawing young talent and energy. So please stay with us. After failing to reach a decision during over 18 hours of talks on Sunday and Monday, EU leaders have reconvened in Brussels to try to agree on who should lead the bloc's institutions for the coming 5 years. Dutch socialist Frans Timmermans, a frontrunner for European Commission president, faced strong opposition from the Czech Republic and fellow Visegrad four states. Brian Kennedy reports.
Upon his arrival in Brussels on Tuesday, Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš told journalists that for Frans Timmermans to head the EU executive branch would be a total catastrophe for Central European states.
He wants somebody on the presidency of Commission which don't have a negative view about our region. Mr. Timmermans is not acceptable for us, that's it.
As EU Commission first vice president, Timmermans was the public face of efforts to compel the Czech Republic and other states to take in asylum seekers in line with a mandatory redistribution mechanism. The issue caused a rift between the Visegrad 4 countries, the Czech Republic, Poland, Hungary and Slovakia, and other European governments, who accused them of a lack of solidarity.
Frans Timmermans had a lot of expression about other region. We have completely different view on migration. He was always behind quotas and so on. So this is a problem for us.
In an earlier interview with Czech radio, State Secretary for EU Affairs Milena Hrdinková said EU leaders had failed to agree on a new European Commission president for a variety of reasons.
It's a complicated, difficult process that reflects the different priorities of different member states. Some are presenting it as being due to objections from the Visegrad 4 or Italy. In fact, it is because no compromise has yet achieved a balance. Mr. Timmermans is a big personality with great ambition and strong opinions. He's capable, ambitious, and experienced. But for the Visegrad 4, some other countries, and the EPP, the European People's Party, he would not be a suitable president. He divides rather than unites Europe.
Under the so-called Spitzenkandidat process, the new European Commission president is traditionally the nominee of the largest parliamentary group, currently the EPP. But according to a gentleman's agreement hammered out on the margins of last week's G20 summit in Japan, Timmermans has a chance because the EPP picked a lackluster candidate, namely Manfred Weber, a staunch conservative best known for resisting the expulsion of Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban from the group for undermining the rule of law. Some are characterizing the Visegrad 4's objections to Timmermans as stemming from their respective governments' illiberalism. Orban says they cannot support Timmermans because he is George Soros's man and opposes anyone from a different worldview. For his part, Mr. Babiš argues that the eventual successor to Jean-Claude Juncker, whoever it may be, should not comment on political matters, but rather focus on implementing European Council conclusions. Mr. Babiš has said current European Commissioner for Competition, Margrét Vestager, would be a suitable candidate as she understands Central Europe and would respect the region's interests. Another name being floated by those opposing Timmermans' bid is that of World Bank Chief Executive Kristalina Georgieva, a Bulgarian economist. Either would address calls for a geographical and gender balance.
Brian Kennedy with that report. And moving on now, we go to the Karlovy Vary International Film Festival, which is currently underway. One of the most discussed Czech films at the festival is Oldtimers Starici by Martin Dušek and Ondřej Provazník. It's based on a real story from the late 1990s of two men's plot to kill a notorious communist prosecutor, Karel Vaš, who 4 decades earlier had secured prison terms for them and the death sentence for several of their friends. Ian Willoughby discussed the film with its editors, starting with Martin Dušek.
In about 2008, I saw a TV report where there was this very old guy and he was telling the whole story. They wanted to kill the prosecutor around 2000. He was free to tell at that time in 2008 because it was not punishable anymore. And I came to Andre and I told him that would be a great documentary or docudrama about these guys. And Andre said, okay, but let's make a real feature film about those events.
Your characters really are old-timers. They're in their 80s, I suppose. There were challenges for them in trying to carry out this revenge that they planned.
In the 50s, they fought against the regime, against the soldiers, against the army. They were fighters. But now they have to handle with their age, with their relatives, with things that are quite banal. But for them, it's a huge issue to go on. Every day, every hour, every obstacle is a small victory.
Somebody might think that it's kind of a simple anti-communist statement film, but in fact it's not that much about communism and its mechanisms. It's more about old people and what they bear in their minds and how it contrasts with the present world that surrounds them. And also about the absurd situation that somebody was once a fighter who went through the whole Second World War, who was in Gulag, who escaped from heavy armed prison, but now it's a weak old man on a wheelchair, but who still wants to do his revenge.
The character Vlasta tells his friend Tonda, who was also a victim of the state prosecutor, that he's planning to kill the prosecutor. That raises the question of, is it ever justified to kill?
For us, it's obvious that they can, that these people can do these things. These characters who went through so many suffering in the 50s, whose friends were killed in 50s in the show trials. So for them, they really don't see any moral dilemma in their mission. And from our experience, from all the researches that we made, we think that these people would do it. And we, Martin Dušek and me, we wouldn't probably kill anybody, but we don't know because we didn't went through such a horrible things in our lives like our characters.
Yes, we are living in a peaceful times nowadays, so we don't have a reason for a revenge like that. But for them, as Andrei said, who suffered a lot and somebody was directly responsible for the suffering, for them it's totally reasonable and we cannot judge them really.
But I think what fascinates us about the story, and probably should also the audience, is that our time nowadays, the contemporary society, is somehow infected by relativism, what is true, what is not, and people are confused. And our characters, they are not confused at all.
My last question is, you guys were about 12 years old, I guess, in 1990. It wasn't a question for your generation, but how do you think Czech society dealt with the communist past and the crimes of communism in the 1990s, especially, Andrei?
For sure, there were lots of faults in these. Otherwise, we wouldn't like to shoot this movie. So I think lots of crimes of the communist times were not punished. I think there could be tougher on the communist politicians in the 90s, for sure.
Film director Ondřej Provazník, and you also heard Martin Dušek speaking to Ian Willoughby at the Karlovy Vary International Film Festival. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time to go places. And we'll be heading east today. Olomouc used to be the historical capital of Moravia, the eastern part of what is now the Czech Republic. It all changed at the end of the 30 Years' War when the city was ransacked by invading Swedish armies. All the important institutions were moved south to Brno, and Olomouc never regained its previous privileged status. Luckily for the city, being sidelined by ruling regimes helped to keep its charming rustic character. And now, in the 21st century, Olomouc is drawing young talent and energy, as Vít Pohanka reports.
The town hall in Olomouc boasts astronomical clock, the second oldest after Prague. But even though it dates back to the 15th century, you wouldn't think so from the look of it. For it was damaged at the end of the Second World War and completely rebuilt in the style of socialist realism in the early 1950s by a famous Czech artist, Karel Svolinský. So you are greeted by optimistic characters of a worker, a sportsman and sportswoman, scientist and a farmer on a tractor, all in typical 1950s outfits. It seems so out of place on the otherwise well-preserved historical building of the town hall that from time to time there are repeated calls for a complete change of its outward appearance. But Vladimír Gračka, Olomouc history expert and author of several books on the subject, wouldn't hear of it.
Mě to obnova po válce, on nebyl tak zničený, jak se tvrdí. It is a post-war reconstruction. The clock was not actually damaged as badly as is widely believed. It was not hit directly. Only the roof and the arch above the clock sustained real damage. The original parts can still be seen here in the town hall and in the museum. And the way it looks, well, it's an illustration of the times when it was reconstructed, isn't it? You can still see the name of Josef Stalin here in the lower part, where the important anniversaries are listed. Yes, there are the figures of workers, farmers, a scientist, but these are people and professions that have always been with us.
Rok 55 bylo desáté výročí osvobození, bylo tady asi 20 000 lidí na to otevření.
The year 1955, when the city unveiled the reconstructed clock, was the 10th anniversary of the liberation of Czechoslovakia. Some 20,000 people came for the ceremony, and I was among them as a 13-year-old boy. For me, the astronomical clock is part of Olomouc.
Já to beru jako součást Olomouce.
The astronomical clock is one of the first things that you will probably notice when you come to the main square in the center of Olomouc. Not far from it, there are other places, literally hidden under the surface of everyday life. Mr. Gračka is leading me to dark underground space under the parish church of St. Michael. It was dug out back in the Middle Ages by Dominican monks who came to build one of their most important centers in what is now the Czech Republic. A few meters below the surface, there is a small underground basin.
Když vznikal tento klášter, uvádí se, že to byl dominikánský mnich.
When this monastery was founded, a Polish monk called Hyacinth allegedly discovered this underground stream. It's quite a curiosity because we're now some 25 meters above the level of Mlynský Potok, the closest branch of the Morava River that flows in a nearby park. The water obviously rises through the ground, which was very convenient for the monks building a monastery. These days, of course, we do not use it as drinkable water, but in the old times they used to drink it. We can see the remnants of the well above us through which the monks used to sink buckets to gather the water. So what we have here, in fact, is a well on a hill.
Of which very few people are actually aware.
Z toho celého objektu, z toho dominikánského kláštera se zachoval opravdu tady jenom tento sklep, asi tak zhruba.
For the whole monastery complex, only this cellar survives, about 50 to 80 square meters in size. The other underground spaces are not accessible to the public, and they're used for storage purposes of the St. Michael's Parish Church.
A to když prší, anebo když je, představte si sucho, tak bylo tak tam, jak je tam ten černé ten.
When it rains, or on the contrary, when the weather is dry, the water level almost instantly changes. It goes up and down some 20 centimetres. You can see it on the blackened water line over there. And here, through this narrow crevice, the rainwater flows to the underground basin.
In other words, there is a lot more in Olomouc than meets the eye of an average tourist. In one of the many new cafes, I meet Majka Ošťádalová, successful businesswoman, senior consultant in public relations. She divides her time between Prague and her native Olomouc.
I thought that I wouldn't be living here, that I would stay in Prague, but there is some kind of connection which brings me here at least once a month. So I'm like a half Olomouc citizen, I would say now.
When it comes to places to see and do in Olomouc, Majka Ošťádalová has more than one recommendation.
There are so many places to see in Olomouc, parks, fountains. It's really a big variety of sites. But for me, a place which is a must, I think, is the Přemysl Palace. It's a place which is very closely connected with our history. Because in 1306, our king Wenceslav III was killed there, and it was basically the end of the Przemysl dynasty. And on the top of that, it's lovely architecture place because it's a Romanesque building, so it's very special.
If Brno in the south of Moravia has its Villa Tugendhat and other modernist masterpieces, smaller Olomouc in the center of the region boasts the exquisite Art Nouveau Villa Primavesi.
It was built by a rich Olomouc family called Primavesi. They came to Olomouc by the end of the 18th century and they became very rich bankers. And in, I think, 1905, Otto and Eugenia Primavesi decided to build a family house, a seat, a kind of seat of the family. And they chose a beautiful location right in the center of Olomouc, on the Olomouc town walls, the former fortification. So it's... It's above the trees and you have a beautiful view of the trees in the park and the river. So the place itself is really very nice. And the interesting thing is that they were connected with artist, Art Nouveau artist in Vienna. So not only the villa itself is built in Art Nouveau, but also it was decorated by, for example, Gustav Klimt. So this is a very special place, and when someone take there, they usually appreciate seeing that.
So it's open for the public? Yeah.
It is open for the public. You can go there and have a look inside. There is also a small garden. There is a beautiful mosaic at the entrance. So it is possible to go and see it.
And then there is the geographic location of Olomouc. It makes it an ideal starting point for exploring the eastern part of the Czech Republic.
A nice trip, for example, is to the Jeseniki Mountains. If you prefer to see some natural walk around or skiing in winter, it's a great destination.
How far is it, roughly, by car?
It's about 1 hour. You can get there by car, you can get there by train very easily. It's very well accessible. And in my view, the Jeseniki Mountains are not that commercialized, like, for example, Krkonoše. They are very well preserved, so it's a nice place to go. Another trip you can take is to go and see Olomoucké tvarušky production, or the history of this special kind of cheese, which has been produced here in the villages, in the region, for... I think a couple of centuries.
Quite smelly. Yeah.
Well, interestingly, it's not as smelly as it used to be, but it's also actually very healthy because very low percentage of fat, a lot of calcium, for example. So it's this very special kind of cheese, which is also protected by the European Union, by the way. And... although it's called Olomoucké tvarušky, it is produced in Loštice, a place which is about 30 kilometers, 40 kilometers from Olomouc. And there is a new modern museum of tvarušky, which I believe is worth seeing because you see the history, you can even try to produce your own tvarušek, or if you are not that much successful, you can buy some stuff in their shop and also learn about some recipes and this kind of stuff. And if you go to Loštice, you can also get a little piece of history because there is Loštice synagogue, which is definitely worth seeing as well.
But it's not just the sites and rich history that make Olomouc special. Like Brno, it has recently undergone a perceptible change for the better, says Majka Ošťádalová.
I think some 6-8 years ago I have noticed some kind of like signals of shifting the energy of the town, meaning that all of a sudden you would find here more cafes, interesting, more restaurants, even hipster cafes. So this kind of energy, which of course reflects also in some cultural events and life, and in people going more to the streets and going to places or events such as vintage markets and farms markets and now, for example, the Christmas markets, meaning that I think that people simply began more enjoying life here. And that's something which I like, and I'm happy for Olomouc that this kind of energy has come here.
And similar to Brno, it was centuries-old tradition of higher education that seems to have played a key role. Olomouc Palacký University was founded in the 16th century. It recently launched an information campaign including video spots featuring music that you can hear in the background. It can boldly claim that since the fall of communism, it grew into first-class Czech educational center, second only to Prague Charles University in international ratings.
I think that the shift of the energy is really connected with the university because you have 25,000 people living here, studying here at 8 different faculties. So it's really a lot of energy of young people coming here. And also, in my view, the university has invested a lot of money into students, not only the infrastructure like living, but also their everyday life. And they are offering them various events now, and the students are also active themselves. So now the university is perceived as a really big player in social life and in general life in Olomouc. And I also hear it from my friends and other people that university seems to be the driving force now in Olomouc.
Do you think the local people realize it? I mean, that the local businesses are taking maybe even advantage of it?
I think that local people enjoy and have realized that there is more happening in the streets, and they like going out, which I think was not really the case like in the 90s. Olomouc was more a little bit of a dead city, to be honest, in my view. So this is something which the local people have realized and enjoy, as I feel it. I'm not so sure about the local businesses. I know that recently there has been a kind of research study on creative industries, for example. And we know that there is a potential here, but it still needs to be really released.
We started this short visit to Olomouc at the town hall. The astronomical clock was, in a way, a symbolic attempt to marry its centuries-old tradition with a new outlook, the communist utopian vision of the future, where everyone will be happy and equal. These days, the city and its people are not so ambitious. Yet it seems that they succeed in attracting young and talented people to this ancient place, and so really form and shape the future.
Vít Bohanka there, reporting from the city of Olomouc, and I'm afraid that's all we have for you today. You'll find us at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you, as always. And, of course, you can follow Radio Prague on Facebook and Twitter. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today, and take care.